And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Babe, how do we find a way? And if we don't find a way, I guarantee you going to penalties, they will feel like it's Argentina's momentum.
Porro, chance to cross, hooks it in. Williams battling, knocks it down. It's free. It's a goal. It's Ferran Torres.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens. Tonight is Wednesday, July 22nd, and this is episode 245. I'm Kevin, joined tonight by only Darren. Gino, we have off on special assignment. We've got him tracking David Stearns and Brian Cashman to see what inside information we can find out about the New York plans for the trade deadline. Please catch us wherever you listen to your podcast. Join us on Facebook and social media. Send us your comments and questions. We'd love to hear from you. Tonight, we have a new soccer champion. We have a new champion golfer of the year. And as I said, the Major League Baseball trade deadline is approaching fast. Darren, how are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. You got to remember, Gino, not only covering baseball, most of you don't know this, professional hula hooper, and this is a big weekend for that tournament. Gino's all over it. So we're rooting for him. Bring the gold medal back, G. I'm ready. I'm ready to talk some sports, Kev. Why don't we kick off with that World Cup, pal?
Let's get into it. Yep. Well, we had a very entertaining third-place game on Saturday, won by England over France 6-4. We'll get to that in a minute.
Has France ever won a major battle against England? That's really the question.
Sunday was the final. Spain pretty much dominated the game. Outpossessing Argentina 2-1. Outshooting them 20-2. They had 12 shots on goal, 2-0. Yes, 0 for Argentina. But it took an extra time goal in the 106th minute from Ferran Torres to give Spain the 1-0 victory. Darren, what are your thoughts?
Spain dominated this game. The thing was, and you know, Argentinian goaltender Emilio Martinez was great, right? But I also felt like Spain lacked a little bit in their finish. A lot of those shots were, I'm not saying they were easy saves, but he didn't have to be the most acrobatic at all. And there was a free kick where he made an amazing save. It's about two or three where he had to do it, but he set the record with 10 saves, right? Yes. For a finals record, right? So Martinez was unbelievable. The fact of the matter is Argentina had no answer in how to attack. They basically chose to stop doing it. They had possession from time to time, but never really offensive possession. When they had possession, they were passing around the midfield, and they were playing like the old American teams from the 80s and 90s. Just kick it long and hope for the best. Yeah. I mean, they really didn't have much of an offensive plan, and this Messi couldn't get involved, Kev. And if Messi can't get involved, I don't know what Argentina's going to do.
Yeah, you know, we saw it the whole tournament. Spain's defense, I know the goalie set the record. He had, what, 7 shutouts in the 8 games, I believe. But
he's not tested, though.
The defense is just so good. They recover so quickly. They just squeeze the life out of the opponents. Don't give the opponents any chance to really get anything going, including Messi. And really, we saw it time and time again. If Messi played well, Argentina was able to compete. And they had a fairly easy schedule all the way up through the championship game,
absolutely,
maybe including the semifinals with England. But, you know, Spain just totally took Messi out, and that was it for Argentina.
Yeah, the funny thing is I left this game feeling better about the Americans, and I'm going to tell you why. Because Belgium probably played the best game against Spain of anybody. Belgium was in that game.
Yeah,
I mean, they weren't dominating possession, but they got offensive. They pressured them offensively. Almost made me feel better about how the Americans, who lost that game 4-1, but you know, it was kind of late stuff that kind of got to them. Well, yeah. Made all of a sudden I felt like, wow, maybe the Americans weren't as bad as I felt after that game, because Belgium was the only team that gave Spain any kind of pressure in this series. The only one that scored a goal. You know, this tournament was very one-sided for La Roja. And listen, here's the thing, right? So we get the Enzo Fernandez gets the 93rd minute yellow, right?
Yep.
This is the biggest play of the game because it's a second yellow, and it's a blatantly dumb, stupid, egregious attack for a yellow.
Yeah,
he gets the first one earlier, basically for arguing and being a jerk, which he was.
He was.
I'm not saying it was right or wrong, because we were debating this back and forth at the time, Kev. We were going back and forth. And
yeah.
You might have read me wrong. I didn't say he was wrong, but I'm saying this is going to be an opportunity for someone to blame the officiating and the officiating coming into play. And the fact of the matter is that I thought the officials had a good game.
They really did.
I thought they had a really good game in letting them play, but they took the random yellow out of all 11 Argentinians, who, by the way, showed a lot of lack of class in this one as the game wound down.
Yep.
Turning their backs when they were getting the everything was a little bit wrong with it. But, you know, he gets the one, and then when you know you have a yellow, you can't do that, Kev. You just can't do it.
No, it's a stupid play, and he comes up, no. It's like, come on. It was a clear second yellow. I mean, like you said, when you already have the first yellow, it was only 10 minutes before that he got the yellow.
Exactly.
It's not like he got it in the 10th minute of the first half, where he's played the whole game and maybe forgot he's on the yellow or something. He had just gotten the first yellow. And you've got to know. I mean, Argentina, especially once Paredes came in as a sub, I think they really changed their tactics. First half, I thought they tried to play soccer with Spain. The second half, I felt like they were getting frustrated, and they tried to play more physical. Some might say borderline dirty in some of the stuff.
They were dirty. I was rooting for Argentina. I thought they were the dirty team.
I started the game rooting for Argentina, rooting for Messi.
Gino hates Messi, so it makes it fun for us, by the way. That's why we do this hula hoop contest and with the meetings. Gino, you know, he hates Messi, so it's fun for me and Kevin to just needle Gino just a little bit.
Yep. So I was rooting for Argentina, rooting for Messi. But as the game went on, I was watching Argentina play, and without any real skin in the game, I found myself rooting more and more for Spain to finally get that goal and shut up especially the way Argentina played the second half and into extra time. And they were just, you know, it showed with the yellow cards. They got 6 yellow cards on the players, 1 on the coach, including 2 on Fernandez. I mean, yep. And all of them were well-deserved, except for the referee dissension there, the first one by Enzo. Every other yellow card was
deserved. But you could have called it on anybody on Argentina at any point. He finally had enough. Enzo called that. It was kind of like a dive. It was kind of like then an argument, then the mock clap after the whole thing. And that's why he got it. But so you understand why the ref does it? Because, I thought the ref had a really good game of trying not to control it and trying to dictate it. But he ends up dictating it because then Enzo's dumb enough to commit the second yellow. And I texted this right away to you guys. And it was like, okay, there's no way Spain doesn't score up a guy in 30 minutes. There's no way. They control play. Argentina just didn't have an answer for them. It was the first time Argentina looked a step slow in the whole tournament to me. And you realize how good Spain is. And they're so young. They're going to be around for freaking ever, which is why I was rooting for Argentina. Because I feel like Yamal and company are going to win this a lot because they are so good. The way they handled France, you're like, whoa, they shut France down. And that's not easy to do, and just crazy.
They're on beaten streaks up to, 38, I think it is?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've been incredible in international play. They won the Euros last time they were held. They won the World Cup. It's rare to have that double there. And they deserved the championship this year.
Yeah, listen, Europe is stacked, okay? France, England, Belgium, even, you know, but you talk about Portugal. I mean, you can talk about a ton of great European teams to win the double. It's tough enough to just get through Euro, you know. I mean, to win the double is amazing. You know, listen, I don't root for Spain, but congratulations to Spain. I mean, they were the best team in the tournament. It showed throughout.
And it's funny, you know, it felt like they were even trying to help Argentina out because once you got the extra time, I thought it was a little bit of a soft foul, but they call on Marino. I thought Otamendi sold it in the 96th minute, which took away the first goal.
Yes.
I mean, he stepped on the foot. Did it really affect the play? No. It was soft.
It was in the zone. It was in the box. And you're like, I wouldn't have called it, but – and I don't know. I feel like the announcers almost always defend the referee in this stuff, unless it was like something blatant. And they were like, no, it's definitely a foul. And I'm honestly the guy that doesn't know what a foul is now because of the inconsistencies of the officiating during this process. 2 referees, guys. It's not that complicated. There's one guy running up and down all day long, running more than the players are for the most part. I know you have two linesmen like hockey, but there's nothing wrong with having a second referee because there's no way one guy can watch 20 players on the field. There's no way. You can't. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense. Yes, you can catch offsides and stuff. That's what the linesmen are for. Great. But two referees would make such a difference in this sport.
And then Torres, his second goal was taken off when he was just offside.
He was just off. He was just off. It was close.
You know, after watching the entire World Cup, I mean, I think out of the 104 games, I must have seen parts of 100. That's benefits of working from home. And I tell you, I wish they would go to feet rather than body parts.
Me too.
I think it's so
you
much
have your head just above, but your feet are even. Almost like hockey, you know, like yeah. let's get the zone. Let's have the feet established in the zone or not in the zone. That's the key to the whole thing.
Yeah, I'd much rather see the feet because, you know, Torres there, his feet were behind the defender. Or his feet were on sides. His shoulder was offside.
Exactly.
That's tough. I mean, wow.
I mean, it's a sport where it's so difficult to score as it is that I'm not saying you have to give advantages to the offensive player, but it should be fair.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. You're running a full run. Listen, it's not a horse race where you win by a shoulder, you lose by a shoulder. It's like, you know, you're on even terms with the guy, basically. Come on. And, you know, there's no reason to call that. I mean, Spain could have easily won this game 5-0. They were that much better. They were just that much better.
Yeah. You know, Darren, you said if they had better finishers or finishing touches, they had 4 or 5 goals there.
And that's not to take anything away from Martinez. I mean, he did everything he possibly could, but there were some spots where the net was somewhat open and it was right near him, or close enough where he didn't have to move that far.
Right. Real quick, I just mentioned the third place game. England jumps out to a 4-0 halftime lead, and France stays in there and could have packed it in there, but they came back 3 straight goals, 2 of them by Mbappe to cut it to 4-3. But Saka, I thought Bellingham did a nice job. Saka, who scored 2 first half goals. Mm-hmm. Bellingham let Saka take the penalty kick. He scored to get his hat trick in the 7th minute. And then Dembele and Bellingham exchanged goals to make it 6-4 in the final.
Yeah, they cut it to 1 twice, France, so they didn't quit.
Yep. 1-4. A lot of people were criticizing. I saw a lot of criticism on Mbappe. Oh, Kane didn't play. Bellingham didn't start. This one didn't start. Mbappe's out there playing for personal glory, trying to get the golden boot and trying to set the record and all. To me, I'd rather see my star player out there playing. What do you think?
It's the last game of the year. Why not? I mean, I don't know what we're worried about. How old's Mbappe?
27?
You're right. I mean,
ish.
He's 27 years old. He's in peak physical fitness. I think he is 27 exactly. Peak physical fitness. You know, he's healthy enough to play. It's the World Cup, third place. Let him play. Yeah. I mean, listen, I understand if somebody's banged up or somebody's been, you know, a minor injury that they've been playing through, then don't let him play. But if you're healthy, play for your country.
Yeah.
Listen, and yes, he passes Messi with the goals and all that type of stuff, and maybe there was a little bit of personal glory. Who cares?
Yeah.
Kylian Mbappe is as gifted an offensive player as we've seen, next to the Messi and Ronaldo. I mean, he's in that top three, and you feel like Yamal's 2 years away from passing all three of them. This kid looks like he's a wizard with the ball in his feet.
I tell you, it'd be interesting to watch him if he was fully healthy, because he was hurt at the beginning of the tournament, mm-hmm. coming into the World Cup, and you could tell he wasn't quite there all the way like he can be, but you know, boy, the talent is there at 19 years old.
This kid's going to be 23 at the next one. They're playing in Spain, Portugal, Morocco after the first couple games are in Uruguay and Argentina. I don't understand how Uruguay, Paraguay, and Argentina have like the first couple of games. I guess they're going to try to say, hey, Messi, come on out at 43 for one game out here. And then I don't know why they're doing that. And then let's all travel from South America to Europe. I don't understand it, but whatever.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, I mean, listen, Trump's Trump, and you like him, you hate him. He's like the Yankees or Notre Dame. There's no – or Duke basketball. There's no in between.
Yeah,
but he's talking big about getting this back here. He's like, we don't need Canada or Mexico. You know, you can have a little bit of decorum with that. But I got to tell you, except for the fact that I couldn't afford to go, it was great having it in our time zone. It was great having it where we have the infrastructure to really handle it all. Yep. And every visiting fan seemed to enjoy the heck out of it, which was fun. I mean, it was. I think it was a World Cup that was received very well by the world. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I think the positives, the fans coming in, especially we talked about previously, Scottish fans drinking Boston Dry, the Norway fans with the Norway Row and traveling to other sporting events. They were at City Field. They were in Shinnecock. They were all over the place and enjoying everything. And, you know, Holland was just an incredible role model or icon or whatever you want to call it for Norway.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great that the stars came out. You know, Messi, Mbappe, Holland, Kane, all with great World Cups. Bellingham stepped up to score a lot and really put his name in there. Dembele scored a lot.
Yeah. I think tournament. He may not have scored as many goals, but he a great tournament.
Yep. Rodri, you know, controlling that midfield and, you know, again, not scoring, but really controlling Spain's defense and the way they set up. And, you know, the only negative to me was really all the flopping. It gets a little tiresome after a while. And something needs to be done about the flopping.
I think two referees and actual yellow cards for flopping will fix it. But you have one referee can't do it. You can't watch everything.
Yep.
You know, there was a play where on the yellow card, when Enzo, all of a sudden, one of the Argentinian players goes down. Not touched, nobody near him.
Yeah.
And Messi starts screaming that he got knocked down. I mean, they're trying to distract the ref. And a less seasoned referee, which we saw earlier in the tournament, as they have a bunch of countries represented and some of these guys never doing a World Cup game, could have easily been swayed by it.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just a sport where, you know, we make fun of the NBA for flopping. Soccer might be worse. You just want – I agree with you on the offsides. I agree with you on the flopping. We just need to see a little bit more of it. You know, that's what it comes down to. Just need to see a little bit more of penalties or yellow cards against players that flop. I mean, we saw it in one big spot, right? And it affected us, you know. It gave a red card and it threw everything off. And it was just for a player that thought he was about to get tackled and didn't. But it was let go so many other times. It was kind of crazy.
Yep. Any thoughts on the first ever World Cup halftime show?
You know what? I thought they did a nice job with it. I thought of you the minute they showed Ted Lasso, because I watched the show and I know you did too. So when they showed Ted and they showed Beard and they had the whole thing going, and I thought it was pretty cool. Believe, you know, with Bieber. I mean, I actually thought the Bieber set was horrible because everything was so high energy, and then he comes out there with like an acoustic guitar thing. Just like it should have been all high energy though throughout. They tried to make it worldwide. They Shakira, they the Asian band,
the BTS, whatever they're called.
You know, they did a good job in a lot of it. Would have liked to seen a little bit of Americana more to it, maybe, but that because we were host. But outside of that, really no complaints. I thought they made it fun. I thought they made it exciting. So, listen, it was 10 minutes longer than the usual halftime, which I don't like, but that would be my only detriment to it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for America, for an American performer, I thought they could have gone a little bit more current rather than Madonna.
Yeah, she's older. She lives in England most of the time. I thought that they could have gone. I would have probably thought they would have gone country. And because the team song was, Country Road, I would have probably kind of went somewhere that way, even if you were kicking it off that way, just because it meant so much to the American fan base for it.
Yeah.
But they went with Madonna.
Go get Darius Rucker.
Exactly.
You're more than happy to go see Country Road.
Get Jason Aldean. Get any of these guys.
Yep.
Get Luke Holmes to come out there and sing it. You can get anybody you want, any one of the country guys. They're very patriotic. They come out there and do it in a heartbeat. Yep. You could have got Tim McGraw to do it. You know, there's a lot of ways you could have went with that.
Yeah. But so other than that,
you got Ella Langley, the place would have erupted.
Oh, yeah.
Who's probably the biggest star out there right now.
We love Ella Langley.
Well, listen, Ella Langley is good looking girl. That's the number one song in the country. So what are you going to do?
Yep. But I thought, you know, the rest of it, you know, they did the international with BTS and Shakira and a couple of, and Bieber, you know, same thought as you. I'm not into that sort of music, but I thought they did a wonderful job of representing the world.
Exactly. I thought they did a nice job. Just the American side was the only side I thought was a little bit weak. That was it.
Yep.
All right.
Let's head across the pond to Southport, England, where Australian Ryan Fox birdied 16 and 18 to win the 154th Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. He finishes at 10 under, edging out Cam Young by one and Sam Burns by two. During the tournament, we had three golfers tie the major record of 62. Fox shot his in the third round. Burns and Herbert both shot in the second round. So the scores are out there to be had. But when you've got three 62s, which is 8 under par, the winning score is only 10 under.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible that this winning score was not 15 or 20 under. Darren, what do you think?
Well, Royal Birkdale didn't have much of a bite this week, let's be honest. If you're able to score 62 on a course, the winds weren't there. It looked like a dog track watching a lot of the fairways. You didn't see much green at all. Roughs were, there was no fescue. It was all, everything was just, they were able to hit at anything. They all burnt out. There's a huge heat wave going on in England, and it really, really affected it.
And let's face it, the open courses, they don't have irrigation. They don't have sprinklers to run. They don't do that sort of stuff.
Right.
It's such a damp environment over there that they expect rain, and it's going to be lush green because just of the natural climate. And it wasn't that way this week.
No, I mean, you look at it, just the top players, right? I mean, Young shoots a 64 on Sunday, but the 73 on Saturday cost him. You can't have a 73 round when the course is playing like that. Sam Burns shoots a 62 on Friday, 65 on Saturday, comes back with a 72 on Sunday. Can't do it. Fleetwood was really good in four rounds, but didn't have one great round. His best round was a 67. He needed a 65 or better to have a shot. Yep. Scheffler, had a 70 round and didn't have any dominance. His best round was a 67. You know, you needed DeChambeau, who the two-stroke penalty on that. Yes, he's stomping around, but usually you have some sort of official out there telling you, hey, watch this, watch that, watch that. They didn't really do that.
No.
But he knows better, too. Listen, it's golf, all right? It's the sport where you call penalties on yourself. It's a gentleman's game. If you take any advantage of it, I like Bryson, but I had no problem with the two-shot penalty. I don't know how you felt about it.
Yeah, I mean, as he stomped around and getting the area clear a little bit so he could get a nice backswing and all. It's funny, the two extremes. Rory blasted DeChambeau for everything. And Scheffler comes out. He's not a cheater.
I mean, Rory's had his moments too, by the way. So Rory doesn't have the squeaky clean reputation of being able to sit there and badmouth anyway. Because Rory's like, I don't know, he's one of the sorest losers out there. And he was never a factor.
No.
Shoffley showed his face for a little bit, but then shoots a 71 on Sunday. I mean, so you had a chance of getting a leaderboard, but we never really had it. It was a lot of guys that, as much as Fleetwood finishes a couple strokes or three strokes off, he was never really where you thought he was going to win it.
He birdied a couple late to get to 7 under. That was it. Scheffler cannot sink a putt all four rounds.
Agreed.
The putter was so cold, and he only finished three strokes back.
Yeah, I mean, he couldn't do it. That's how good he is.
Yeah.
And Rory couldn't hit putts either because he was bombing them out. He drove the 400 and whatever yard par four. I mean, he drove it, I mean, without a problem. He was past the pin. But he was – and it was just, I like Russell Henley going in. He didn't do anything until Sunday, shot a 66 to make it look like he was competitive, 4-5 off, but he was never in it. There was a lot of guys that showed their face, but none of the big guys really hung around.
I like Morikawa going in, same thing, a couple of nice rounds, but nothing that he shot low. It was all 68s when he was shooting well. I mean, nothing going there. Herbert, who was the other guy, shot 62.
Yep.
The other rounds were 70, 71, and 71.
You're not going to do – I mean, listen, normally at the British Open, at the Open Championship, I apologize, you're well to do rounds like that. If you have one good round and a couple other rounds right around par, you're great. But in this tournament, this week, you know, Ryan Fox, 62, followed it up on Sunday, did enough to break 70, which was good. Cam Young, you know, crushed himself on Saturday, and that 73 cost him. You can't have a 73 when everybody's shooting in the 60s and there's no wind and there's no rain.
Yeah.
You know, it just happens. Listen, I still enjoy watching the tournament there. It's just Royal Birkdale had nothing to it. Justin Rose, who we thought could play again well, did not do anything. There was a bunch of guys that didn't really show.
I thought the amazing ones were him, Wyndham Clark.
Yeah, no, awful.
Matt Fitzpatrick.
No one expects that.
All three of them missed a cut. Siwoo Kim actually had the lead for a good stretch. He had 8 holes left, and he was at 10 under, and he shoots 4 bogeys in the last 8 holes. My favorite part watching Ryan Fox is he plays fast.
He does.
What do you line up for about 5 seconds?
Exactly. I enjoy that.
You've got these guys out there, you know, straddling the line and tapping their feet and trying to get the lay of the land. And Ryan Fox just goes up there and says, "See ball, hit ball."
It was funny. I played on Friday. I played around here and we were playing with someone I didn't know, obviously. And, you know, it would take him about, I don't know, 50 seconds to line up his putts.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ. And then you watch a professional like Ryan Fox just go up there, look at it, drain it. Not too much. He's not a kid. He's 38 years old. He's been, he's played professionally for a while. And, you know, the moment wasn't too big for him. And happy for Ryan Fox, really am.
Yep.
And now we'll see. That's it for the majors for the season. Now we get the FedEx Cup coming up next, and see how it goes.
We'll pick up in time for the FedEx Cup. See who's gonna go through and win that one. Tommy Fleetwood made his breakthrough last year and won it.
Yep.
So we'll see who can do that this year. All right.
Yeah.
I think we've got to talk about some treasures or gems.
We'll go to you. We'll start with your gems. I'll do the treasures last.
All right. You know, in keeping with the Aussie theme there, Saturday night, Travis Bezina for the Cleveland Guardians hits his first walk-off home run. Hit it off of Dennis Santana. He's the first Aussie with a walk-off home run in Major League Baseball history.
And there you go. Who knew?
A little tie-in with the GOAT Open.
Absolutely. Perfect tie-in.
Go back to Friday night. The Braves, 15-1 win. You know, they empty the bench. Dom Smith goes from DH to first base. So the relief pitcher, Victor Medores, gets to be in the lineup. And wouldn't you know it, his spot comes up. And he gets a 2-run single off a 42-mile-an-hour Ephus pitch from Kyle Higashioka, who was on the mound for, I can't remember. I forgot to write down who they're playing against.
Who's on? Is he on Texas?
Maybe.
I think it's Texas.
But he's the first.
Is he Texas or Toronto? I think it's Texas.
He's the first pitcher to get a hit since Universal DH came in before the 2022 season.
Really?
The last pitcher to get a hit, the last day of the 2021 season, Daniel Bard.
Okay.
And Logan Webb had 2 hits, including a home run.
There you go. Look at that.
Monday night was the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's 755th and final home run. 50 years ago, he set the record.
We were little kids.
At Milwaukee County Stadium off of the Angels' Dick Drago. You remember him?
I certainly do.
That's how old we are. We remember watching Dick Drago pitch.
Absolutely. Dick Drago. Because we were immature, at any time the person had a name Dick, we would just smile and laugh and read his card funny.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, no cable. You know, you only knew people by their baseball cards or when they played our Mets or our Yankees. We didn't really know them any other way except for the All-Star game, which was select few players. And it just seemed more special than it does now. We didn't even touch on the All-Star game last week. I know Gino was mad about that. But it's like when we were kids, the All-Star game in baseball, the other sports always sucked. But baseball had something special about it because you didn't see these guys every day. But you had their baseball cards, and you just idolized them so much. And You know, it just had a special feeling. Now it doesn't have that same luster because you're able to watch a game almost again with any teams that you want.
We grew up, we got our highlights once a week this week in baseball.
Yep.
And we had the Saturday afternoon game. Mm-hmm. There was one national game a week. I remember Garagiola and Kubek doing the announcing for a long time on those.
For a short amount of time, they had Monday Night Baseball.
Yep.
What amount of time was, I think it was Keith Jackson. I think Cosell was part of it as well.
Part of it, yep.
And I think it was a Jim Palmer. No, Palmer was still pitching. It was another like, maybe it was Drysdale. I'm trying to think of who it was. But you'd get it a little bit, but it didn't last very long. They got away from Monday Night Baseball pretty quickly.
I think the Monday Night game I remember was, if I remember right, was the Yankees Orioles, the first game after Munson's
Thurman.
Death. And Bobby Mercer with the home runs, five RBIs.
As he was crying his eyes out, it was his best friend. That was a very emotional moment. I do remember that.
Yep.
I didn't remember it was Monday, but I do remember it was a night game against the Orioles.
I remember it being ABC, so it had to be Monday Night Baseball.
They did it for a couple of years, and it just didn't stick. But I loved it as a kid, and I loved the Saturday afternoon game when I could.
Yep.
You know, it was fun.
All right, for the Pirates. As Marilyn Valdez, his streak was broken today by the Yankees. He had 8 straight games with at least one extra base hit, one RBI. Now, for the Pirates, I mean, this happens quite often. But for the Pirates, the other 3 guys to do it, Paul Wehner.
Okay.
Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
Dale Long.
He had the record. He had homers. He had the homers in there on all those games.
We remember that record watching Mattingly tie it. And then,
yeah, absolutely.
And then Griffey wound up tying it as well in the 90s.
Yep.
And some other guy named Willie Stargell. So for the Pirates list, that's a pretty impressive list.
It's a very impressive list. And I remember as a kid loving the Pirates and the A's because they were the 2 teams that had all the different uniform combinations.
Yep.
Because back then your team wore white or gray. And the Pirates had black and yellow and white and black, and they did everything. The A's did the same type of thing. The We Are Family, Willie Stargell, 1979 Pirates.
Yep. And today, July 22nd, is the 103rd anniversary of Walter Johnson recording his 3,000th strikeout.
Really?
He was the only member of that club for 51 years. Until Bob Gibson got his 3,000th strikeout in 1974, striking out Cesar Geronimo.
That's
coincidentally enough, 6 years later, he was also Nolan Ryan's 3,000th strikeout victim.
That's crazy. That's awesome.
But we went 51 years with one member in it. We're up to 20. And obviously, most of them are recent because Gibson was number 2.
No, absolutely. And now it's hard to imagine them getting back to that number. Because of the way pitchers pitch now.
Yeah, I mean, there's only 2 active, Verlander and Scherzer. One recent was Kershaw.
Yep.
I mean, the list, Ryan, Randy Johnson, Clemens, Carlton, Blylevin, Seaver, Sutton, Verlander, Perry, Walter Johnson, Scherzer, Maddox, Negro, Jenkins, Pedro, Gibson, Schilling, CeCe, Smoltz, and Kershaw. I mean, that's a who's who of.
Yeah, I still don't understand, and I hate the Red Sox. I still don't understand how Curt Schilling is not in the Hall of Fame.
No.
I just don't get it. I know people don't like him. It's probably the same thing as Albert Bell and Jim Rice, but I just don't get it.
People don't like him, and he's a little too right-wing for some people's liking.
His political affiliations probably affected him, but it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Pete Rose where you bet on games. This is a guy that, you know, just – was big in the postseason, was big in the regular season. Maybe he's a jerk all around. Who the hell knows? But you know what? Doesn't matter. The guy should be in the Hall.
He was very good regular season. Tremendous, tremendous postseason pitcher.
I agree wholeheartedly.
All right. And those were my gems.
All right. Let's talk baseball.
Let's talk baseball.
Let's start with you. Let's start with your Mets.
We'll do the good things. Zach Thornton.
Kids continues to pitch well, man.
17 straight scoreless innings, and you know what's nice to see? He throws strikes.
He's not overpowering, but he knows how to pitch.
I mean, watching last night, topping out 92, 93, mix it in, some off-speed stuff, moving the ball around. It's nice to see somebody pitch and go. Last night was 6, the start before that was 7. Yeah. And be around 80 pitches. You know, I've got to suffer through Freddie Peralta throwing 105 in 5 innings.
He's not a thrower. He's a pitcher. There's a big freaking difference. And you don't teach people how to pitch anymore, and that's the problem. Throw as hard as you can for 4 innings, 5 innings, and then we'll pull you.
And you can see, you know, when he's off, he will be rocked.
Because he doesn't throw hard enough.
He doesn't throw hard enough, so it's going to happen from time to time. But you know what? If you're going to give me Zach Thornton as a, you know, 4th starter pretty consistently, I'll take that.
I'm not saying he's untouchable, but he's a guy you kind of like to look into, you know, for your rotation going forward.
Yeah.
And the simple fact of the matter is, because he doesn't throw 98, no one's going to really go out of their way to try to get him.
Right. You know, with him and with Scott and McClain, you know, that's 3. I mean, Scott and McClain still have rookie eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 3 rookies in your lineup, in your rotation there. You're throwing Benj and Ewing. At least as a Met fan, there's something to watch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, there is.
Because my goodness, the dead weight from this past winter. I mean, Simeon's coming back 2 for 16. Robert 1 for 10. Crushed one.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know that's what Robert does. It was funny watching last night when he had Robert, Benj, and Ewing in the outfield, and those 3 went after the ball and tracked it down. It felt like they had 3 tremendous outfielders out there. Robert can go get him. He can hit the
game. He's not going to play much because Soto's going to be out there, and your outfield is set for the next several years. The Mets shouldn't do anything to it. Ewing looks like a player. Benj looks like a player. Soto's not going anywhere. The Mets should have a really solid outfield.
Yeah. Until today when you put Brett Beatty in right field and he plays Joey Ortiz's fly ball into a triple.
Well, Brett Beatty's not a
You know, the dead weight Polanco, 4 for 29 since coming back. Yes.
You know, it's just there's not a lot to like outside of that outfield and those pitchers that you're talking about. You can still see some opportunity with Jonah Tong. You could, I know he's young, so you don't count him out yet. He got promoted very quickly last year. You give him a chance to kind of figure it all out.
Yeah.
There's really nothing. Nothing really in the infield that gets you too excited for this team right now.
No, nope.
And I mean Lindor, you hear about the rumblings of him and Soto don't get along, and he didn't text Soto when he got the car. Whatever, I don't know. Lindor was the star. Soto came in for double his money. Lindor got upset. I don't know what you want to say. So now, if the Mets are going to deal him, they're going to have to eat a lot of that salary to get him out of here. And if they feel like that's the move they have to make, then that's the move they have to make. Like you said last week, Ronnie Mauricio should be playing a lot. I mean, when healthy, the young infielders have to play. I think Vientos needs to change the scenery. I think Beatty showed you he's in a utility at best player. I know he has moments where he hits. I don't love giving up on Alvarez yet unless you get the right package back.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's pieces here.
Yep.
It just, you know, you just can't GM it like this is a small market team and trying to piece it together. You got to GM it like, hey, listen, we're going to go out there and get a real first baseman. We let a real first baseman walk out of the building. We're going to take a second baseman that played 1 game at first base, and he's going to be the guy. He was hurt. We never got to see him really do anything, but he was never going to be Pete Alonso, even if he wasn't hurt. And this is Semien was an old man. You got rid of a Nimmo guy. Who, listen, right now with the young outfield, you don't even get mad about it because you know what? You're okay with it. But the fact is that, you know, for a guy like Nimmo, you should have been able to get a lot more than a Semien. And the Lindor thing, which you thought he was – sorry, Allie, I know that you love Lindor. But the fact is that at some point he's got to – you know, he's regressed for the most part outside of 2 years ago. He has not been the same player as he was early on in Cleveland. Yep. He got paid a lot of money. No one's going to want that salary. It's like the Padres are dealing with Bogarts. Nobody's going to want that salary. That's why they're floating Mason Miller out there. Say, I'll give you Mason Miller. You got to take Bogarts.
Yeah.
The Mets are going to have to probably do something similar with somebody good. Maybe it's Alvarez, where they say, and take Lindor with him. or I'm not doing it. You know, it's going to have to be something like that.
Yep.
That's kind of where the Mets are.
You know, with the problem was when the trade was made, I understood what Stearns was doing, trading Nimmo for Semien. Open up the outfield spot. You're getting the Gold Glove second baseman, we thought.
Run prevention.
Then we've got Beatty in left and right field. We've got it wound up being Jared Young most of the time, but it was supposed to be Polanco first. Bichette, who's ever played third. I mean, that was the whole thing. But I think it was Nimmo on top of, or the precursor. No, then you lose Alonso and Diaz in consecutive days. And, you know, it was just too much of a shakeup. And all the popular guys were gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, the new guys in as a collection have not done well. And they'll never be loved by the Met fan. Met fans can't wait to get rid of all of them.
Yeah, I mean, listen, because you have a I know you have Soto for a lot of years, and I know that he's a great hitter, and it's not going to go anywhere. But the simple fact is, when you're wasting prime years for the guy and being non-competitive and you're not getting this guy in the playoffs, I mean, we saw with the stat I gave you last week, Mike Trout, 12 All-Star games, 12 All-Star at-bats. I have 12 extra I'm sorry, postseason
at-bats. Games or bats,
yeah, 12 postseason at-bats, 12 All-Star games. You know, you don't want to see Soto not get in. And you feel like that at least they have some young talent around it. But Peralta, you knew, was a five-inning guy going into it. Devin Williams, you knew, was shaky in the back of the pen. There were a lot of moves that were made that were questionable. You knew Polanco never played first base. You knew Semien was 35 years old.
Yeah.
You knew Vientos was coming off a bad year after a good year. You knew that Beatty had never shown consistent hitting all the way through. There were a lot of things that you were aware of with this team. You knew Alvarez was coming off a tough year. You knew a lot of things, and it just didn't seem like they were, you know, they were hoping for a perfect storm of things like they had with pitching early last year, and it just didn't work out.
Yeah.
And you start believing in the clinic and all that stuff, and I'm not saying the clinic's wrong, and I'm not saying that they don't produce great pitchers, because the Mets have always done that, and you know what, and they're doing it now to an extent. But it's just, you know, too many things had to go right.
Yep.
It's like a bullpen game.
And none of them have.
You have to go out and have a perfect inning for you to have a great game.
I mean, things that have gone right. Luke Weaver.
Yeah, Luke Weaver's been good, and he's going to be gone. As will both lefties. Raley will be gone. If they don't trade both lefties, they're stupid, because they can get a lot for them.
Both lefties have to go. Luke Weaver, I know, he's under contract next year. You know, with the we've seen Luke Weaver year to year change and be up and down. You're never going to have Luke Weaver at this high of a trade value.
No, you got to take advantage of it.
Exactly.
It's just one of those things. So let's see what we can get out of it. And hopefully the Mets can just replenish the farm system. I do think David Stearns should go. I don't think it's going to happen, but I do think he should go. But we'll get into that at the end of the year.
Yep. All right. How about your Yankees?
Listen, the Yankees offense shows you is when they play good teams, they don't score. The Judge thing, they started off fine when he got hurt, but now it's just it's when they went up against the Dodgers, they had a chance to win that series. They lost game one, play at the plate. Game two, they got blown out. Game three, they went, you know, what was it, five outs for Bednar to make sure that they secured it.
Yeah.
You know, it's Bednar's the only guy out of the bullpen you can trust. The offense is inconsistent at best. They need Bellinger to be more of a consistent bat there. If you're going to pay him that kind of money, he's got to be able to help keep things going. Goldschmidt is cooled off. You know, there's just a lot of things that you see with this team that, you know, you feel like if they play against really good teams and really good pitching staffs, that they're going to struggle until Judge gets back, because Judge loosens everything up for everybody.
Yep.
And, you know, Ben Rice, you know, great season. I'm not taking it away from him, but you can pitch to Ben Rice. You can pitch. I think Bellinger's the hardest guy to pitch to in the lineup, but he's just got to be a little bit more consistent. Caballero has to play shortstop. Volpe probably has to go. You got to find him a new scenery, because I don't think he's done. He's only 25 years old. He's got pop. He can play defense. He just, you know, replacing, you know, Jeter and being that next guy, that's a lot. Remember, Mickey Mantle came up as the next Joe D, wore number 6, sent him back down after the struggle, came back as number 7, did very well.
Yeah.
Sometimes guys need that little second break, and he probably just needs a change in scenery. The catcher position's a joke. They have to bring somebody in. I mean, you can't have a guy hitting 153 out there playing every day. You just can't. you just can't do it. Ryan McMahon's improved, but, you know, against good pitching, Ryan McMahon's not getting hits. Against good pitching, Wells is an out. The automatic outs at the bottom of the order. I mean, you know, you want to talk about the positives? Freed comes back. Those shutout tonight. That's it. I mean, he didn't go nine, but he went six. But still, you'll take that all day long. Rodon is looking to be back real soon. So you're starting to get the arms back. And that's the strength of this team. Cole, I mean, I know he hasn't been dominant, but he's been really good for a guy trying to refigure it out. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Schlittler's a star. You know, he's a legit star. So the rotation's great. Even Will Warren comes in and then is trying to save it tonight here and all that. You might be ahead of me. It's two outs in the ninth for me. You might have seen the end of the game. But
they went to Tim Hill to try to close it out.
They went to Hill to try to lock it up. They brought in Warren because usually it's Bednar. I mean, but the pen has to be upgraded. The catching position has to be upgraded. And maybe something on the left side of the infield to try to help this team. You know, Grisham's okay. He's streaky as hell. You know what you got. I like seeing Dominguez in the lineup. I like to see more of him because I think he's a dangerous bat when he has things going. You know, the Yankees, they're trying to chase down Tampa Bay, but guess who's right behind them? The team I hate more than any team in the world, the Boston Red Sox, who haven't lost since we were 249 years old as a nation. Haven't lost since the U.S. was still in the World Cup race. They haven't lost in freaking forever. And, you know, the team that looked like they were dead last when this started. Now they've blown by Toronto, which, you know, they go from within a milli-inch of winning the World Series to being dead last in the American League East. And Baltimore. I mean, so, you know, the Yankees are going to have to hold off Boston, who's doing a lot of it without Roman Anthony. So, I mean, you know, it's there's a lot going on in the American League now. It's going to tighten up. It's not been as good. The National League's been more dominant all season long. The records say it all. Now we got to see if the Yankees can make the right moves to kind of propel them into it because they have the pitching staff that can go all the way if they can get some timely hitting and get Judge back.
Yep. Red Sox are down 5-1 the eighth to the Orioles.
I'm praying for the loss. We need them
maybe a 15-game winning streak will end. Like you said, you know, the American League is so wide open. You know, nobody's been that great. Nope. And that leaves everybody in it. And all of a sudden, you know, the sellers, I mean, it's the Mets, the Giants. Do the Astros want to be sellers?
No, they're three out. Why would you sell? I mean, the Astros legitimately can win that division. The Astros, Detroit's a seller. Maybe they're six out. Maybe they're not. Kansas City's a seller. If anybody wants anybody on the Royals, there's a couple of players you could go get. You know, it's like the Twins can be sellers. They're not that far out, but they may not feel like they have any chance to compete. They're still below 500.
Yep.
You know, are the White Sox serious buyers? Or do they live with the youth and don't do anything? Does Cleveland feel like they have to make a move?
If I'm the White Sox.
The Reds are sellers also.
Yeah. If I'm the White Sox, you know, I don't know if I make several moves. But I think in some ways, if I don't know where the biggest weakness is, but if he can make one move to address the weakness, just to show the team that, hey, we want to bring in somebody to try to do something magical this year, that's fine. I don't want to upset the young players, though, that they've got. I mean, they're doing something right there. And they're on the upward trajectory. You don't want to ruin that, but bring in one guy.
I agree. And you don't need a bat. You probably just need another veteran in the pen because the bullpen's not been great. They get away with it, but they haven't been good. You know, if you want to bring in another starter that's got a little bit of veteran experience, that's great. That's about all they need. I don't think that you want to mess with these young bats because these young bats are impressive as hell.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to mess with it. And, you know, Cleveland will do something because they want to, you know, they want to overtake them. They feel like that this is their window. Texas, you assume, does something because it's not that good a team, but they could try something. What Seattle's done all year long with these piggyback starts is another stupid trend to me. Still love it, you know. But you know, we'll see what happens there. But you know, the Oakland's a seller if they want to get rid of any of their players.
Yeah,
I mean, if Luis Severino comes back and they feel like they can get something, but he's a while away. I thought he was safe at first base, by the way, in that Yankee
player. I thought he was.
I don't know how they called him out.
I don't know how they didn't overturn that. He beat it. I mean, they must have, because Ty goes to the running. No, I mean,
I thought so.
Away from it, and Chisholm with his nonchalantness always pisses me off. But that the Yankees get lucky there. Yeah, I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of we're going to find out in the next week. So I mean, that's kind of where we're at here. So
yeah,
that's what we're looking at.
The only other baseball point, my goodness, maybe the worst injury I've seen yet.
Oh God,
the Athletics, Joshua Kuroda Grower, up at the plate, fouls pitch off right down into below the belt. We'll call it that. And he goes down, writhing in agony. He gets up. He continues the at-bat. Gets a hit. Runs a base. He scores. They finally take him out. After the game, they announced he's getting checked for a testicular contusion. A little later, they realize that, no, it's not just a contusion. It's a ruptured testicle.
It just sounds awful.
I mean, my goodness, did every man in America who saw that cringe?
We all winced. We all crossed our legs and winced.
Our thoughts and prayers out to Joshua.
Young player who's actually playing real well since he came up, too. Feel bad for him.
Any other baseball points?
Nah, got a couple of treasures for you, though.
All right. Let's hear them.
Just a reminder that how great Doc Gooden was in his first two seasons in Major League Baseball. 41-13 with a 2.00 ERA, 23 complete games, 11 shutouts, won Rookie of the Year, won a Triple Crown, Cy Young, and he was 20.
Yeah.
I mean, you just forget how much he had to him. Ricky Henderson, by the way, 1985 season. Sometimes people forget how dominant it was. He only played 143 games. He walked 99 times. Hit 24 homers, stole 80 bases, and scored 146 runs in 143 games. Not an easy thing to do. Ricky being Ricky.
Was that the year Mattingly had 145 RBIs too?
It is, 1985. The Yankees were great. They just had no pitching. Negro was the ace, and they couldn't get past Toronto. July 17, 1963, Dave DeBuscher smacks a single off Washington's Benny Daniels. His first and only major league hit. He pitched seven innings that day for the White Sox, had seven Ks, allowed two runs. It was his first career win. He threw a shutout a month later in August against Cleveland. His baseball career finished 3-4 with a 2.90 ERA. That was his only hit, obviously. And then he became a full-time basketball player. But Dave DeBuscher for the White Sox. Wow. Wasn't bad.
And predating Danny Ainge.
Yeah, way earlier than Danny. He went to Detroit Mercy, and what's it called? Got the Pistons were the team that drafted him in the ABA. I think it was Fort Wayne, Detroit at the time. Didn't go right there, but then eventually, obviously, won two titles with the Knicks in 70 and 73.
Yep.
Quick football one. Only one team in history has four rushers that had 500 yards in a season. Do you know what team that was?
NFL history.
NFL history.
Somebody with a running quarterback.
It is, but not one you don't normally think of.
Really?
1978's the year.
Saints?
Nope.
Vikings with Tarkenton?
Nah. The New England Patriots. So Sam Cunningham rushed for 768. Horace Ivory for 693, Andy Johnson for 675, and the great Steve Grogan rushed for 539. As a team, they rushed for 3,100 yards that year. But and it was before like the Cody Collins and Craig James. It was Sam Cunningham who was there with those guys as well. Plus Horace Ivory and Andy Johnson and the great Steve Grogan, who you don't think of as a scrambling quarterback.
No, not at all.
I mean, Kansas State, he ran at Kansas State. He was somewhat of a runner, but by the time we really started watching him, he's kind of a veteran quarterback that was a little bit more of a pocket passer that scrambled when he had to.
Yep.
And that's it for my treasures, Kev. You have anything else you want to touch on?
Yeah, ESPN.
Absolutely.
So, you know, a couple of weeks ago was Linda Cohen's last sports center. She, I guess, kind of retired, didn't renew the contract, whatever you want to call it. She'd been around forever. Today, more announced layoffs over the last day or two. Carl Ravitch, who's been there for over 30 years, Baseball Tonight, play-by-play guy. I mean, just around forever. David Lloyd, another longtime anchor. Cam Newton and Ryan Clark, more recently, were let go. Bart Scott, a few other names. It's a different ESPN than we grew up. I mean, right now, the catering Sunday nights to Athletes Unlimited Softball League.
Yeah, they gave up baseball for it, which didn't really make much sense to me.
And they're focusing on, I mean, it's funny when you look around. I mean, every other station feels like it's got a WNBA game. And I don't know how much they draw, unless it's a fever game with Caitlin Clark and, you know, of course, everybody's new favorite, Sophie Cunningham.
Absolutely. I mean, also Tom Pelissero, the NFL, network guy, he was on the ESPN control. He's been there for a long time. You know, he joined the NFL Network in 2017, not as long as Ravitch or something, but a big name. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, like, without Caitlin Clark in these games, I'm sorry, they're not drawing.
No.
There was a bit, and it's going to sound mean that I say this, but Shane Gillis, who I happen to find funny, was doing something at an awards show. It wasn't an ESPY Awards, I don't think, but whatever it was. He introduces a woman and goes, four-time WNBA All-Star, points to the woman in the crowd, and everybody starts clapping. He goes, I'm just kidding. That's my friend's wife. But I knew none of you knew who the WNBA WNBA player was. Laughed and stuff like that, because the simple fact of the matter is there have been some great players, and we're not trying to downplay, you know, Cheryl Swoops from back in the day and Diana Taurasi's run and Sue Bird's run and, you know, Tisha Panichero back in the day. And you had all these guys. I'm just saying, you go back. I mean, you know, Lisa Leslie was a star. There's been a bunch of fantastic players. And even now, your girl from South Carolina, who's Aja Wilson, who's a star. And you have some great players. And I'm not saying it's bad basketball, but – It doesn't captivate. There's no amazing storyline happening right now. Caitlin Clark had the country kind of captivated for a while when she was at Iowa and when she got into the league. You know, Angel Reese was someone that had you captivated for a while as the competitor, as the important competitor to Caitlin Clark. And, you know, and some thought Reese was treated badly. Some thought she was treated well, whatever it may be. But, you know, but the WNBA being the highlight of what ESPN is right now on a Sunday night is not drawing flies.
No.
And listen, we go back to where ESPN was a must watch. You watch a movie like Something About Mary. Hey, you want to come inside and watch ESPN? You know, this was what we all did. Yeah. And who was the host? I mean, everybody knows Berman, but who were the stars? It was Patrick and Olbermann were
Patrick
the first.
Patrick and Olbermann. Yep.
You know, and then you had Kilbourne, and you had, you know, Stuart Scott, and you had Eisen, and you had all these guys that were just funny, but doing the sports. We were in Vegas. I mean, we'll always remember the story because it just made us laugh.
Oh, yeah.
We're sitting there. We're drinking all day. It's like the middle of the afternoon. We used to go. We always go for the NCAA tournament. Now we do AC. We used to do Vegas, right? And we go to Crash for about a half hour before dinner, and then we'll go out and eat and drink some more. And Craig Kilborn doing the afternoon Sports Center. He goes. You think it's time to relax? Then all of a sudden, you remember Jorge, Sean. That's why you bought the dish. It's Nets versus the Wizards. It was the Wizards or the Bulls. I don't even remember. And he goes, Jumanji. And then they show these two big stiffs going at each other. And we just lost it. Part of it because we were tired. Part of it because we had a little bit in us. Part of it because it was just hysterical. And that's what SportsCenter brought for us, Kev.
Yeah. We go back. I mean, the This Is SportsCenter commercials were some of the fun. I mean, they were as much fun to look forward to as SportsCenter itself.
Absolutely.
And that's not a knock on SportsCenter, but, you know, I never missed a SportsCenter.
No, we watched it all the time.
You knew 11 o'clock. That's where you went, Olbermann and Patrick. And, you know, eventually Linda Cohn got in there and Stuart Scott and, you know, like at least he had some of the other, Steve Levy still is around. You know, he's a hockey still, and maybe an occasional appearance on SportsCenter.
John Buchagross. You had a bunch of different guys go through.
Go back, you know, Charlie Steiner. I mean, he was hilarious in the SportsCenter commercials.
Absolutely, he was.
Amanda Holyfield coming to look for him. Charlie hiding under the desk. Charlie was what, the pool boy at the Melrose Place?
Yeah, exactly. And Follow Me to Freedom. Remember, he had that other one.
Yeah. And the power outage or something.
The first one, they had no budget. And Dan Patrick said, we should promote SportsCenter. They're like, we don't need to. He goes, well, we should. So they call up Grant Hill. And he goes, Grant, would you do one? He goes, well, how much? Grant, they're like, Grant, I can give you like $10,000 to your charity of your choice. Can't do anything more. Grant Hill agrees to do it. And you see him playing the piano. Dan Patrick sitting there, leaving him a tip in the tip jar, saying, I missed a couple of I wasn't sharp tonight. I didn't have a great broadcast. I missed a couple of cues, this, that, and the other thing. He starts playing, what was it, Take Me Out to the Ball Game or something like that. And he leaves him money and feels better. Then all of a sudden they call Jason Kidd. First question from Jason Kidd, how much money? No money, but, you know, we'll do that. So they do this whole thing as if the helicopter's landing on the roof and Olbermann, it's like MASH, Olbermann and Patrick going out there, Jason Kidd handing them the tapes saying, focus on the third quarter. And like, do you want to stay? He goes, no, I got to go back to practice. And he flies away. And it's like they started getting the athletes in here. Remember the basketball game where they were playing against, like,
That's what I was just thinking of.
But they took all the names of guys that you knew were pros, that Pooh and Juwan and all these other guys playing with them. And they just did so many fun things with it. They used the mascot well.
Drew Brees with the Mardi Gras flow, trying to get through the ticket booth there, the security gates.
Then following Arnold Palmer, making an Arnold Palmer.
Yes.
Where they're standing behind him, just watching it, just got to watch. And he's making an Arnold Palmer, and they're just with the caddy standing behind him because they never missed a little subtlety. The Manning brothers kicking each other while Archie's looking at them to yell at them. A million fun things they did get. And unfortunately,
was it Van Pelt dialing into a conference bridge, but it's all the mascots in the room, so exactly. Nobody can answer him.
Exactly. That was great.
Even subtle ones, you know, they had the Oregon Duck in his office. And he looks out and he sees the ducks on the pond there, and he can look just like, oh, I'm here working.
Yeah, I'm working.
I mean, little stuff like that we appreciate. And we miss that SportsCenter. We miss that ESPN.
And what happened was our cell phones got in the way. And then, you know, listen, not to be political, but then things just changed. Humor had to be changed a little bit. There was things that would offend some, so you couldn't really do them. And everything got a little bit more specific. And listen, I'm not here to judge a jury on what's right and what's wrong. It's just that the brand of humor that was used for a bunch of guys and women watching SportsCenter was kind of taken away. And, you know, everything started to become a little bit more political in sports and in everything in life, and too much. And unfortunately, that time where, you know, you stayed up for the 11:30 SportsCenter every night just to catch what happened. You know, it's a blow. But even like if your team played like a Monday night or Thursday night football game, or your team played a big game, you wanted to watch the SportsCenter take on it. So you'd watch your game, you'd watch the post game, then you go to SportsCenter to see what their post game was, and it's not the same anymore.
Van Pelt's close.
He's very good.
He's very, but he's one of the last ones that I really want to watch. I love watching, you know, I love him after the Monday night game.
Well, no, he's good.
Because he does that, and then he has that, his bad beats from the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Covering, you know, oh, I had this team plus 28. And they were up by, and they were, you know, winning the whole game, and they wound up giving up 5 touchdowns in the last quarter to lose by.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, all these ones that are crazy. And, you know, Van Pelt's, to me, Van Pelt's really one of the few left that I want to watch. Everybody else, I don't know them anymore. And I feel like they're all interchangeable. And it's just, you know, the morning is all this talk driven, which everybody goes to now, you know, with Mike Greenberg with Get Up, you got Stephen A with First Take, you've got McAfee for 2 hours, and then you get into all the different talking shows, NBA Live, NFL Today, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just,
it's like what they did to the with the MTV, where they don't show videos anymore. Yeah. They try not to show live sports anymore, but there's only so much you could really take, because every take is the same on all these shows. It's the same topic almost. Through. I mean, they might adjust it subtly, but they're talking about whatever the big thing is in sports and how many hours can you really devote to it. And we're sports junkies. We don't mind it. It's just, it, you know what? There was something special about, you know what, the end of the night, you know, I went to the Met game and then I went home and I watched SportsCenter on it and I saw everything else that happened. I went to the Jet game and you know what? It was exciting where I watched the Jet game and now, you know, I'm going to watch what SportsCenter has to say, and they're going to make some, they're going to make fun of me with the butt fumble. They're going to make fun of me for this. They're going to tell me I did something good here, but it was something that was must watch, even primetime, you know, with ESPN, with Berman and Tom Jackson. And then they used to have what they called the stew games, which are usually those matchups between two, you know, 3-9 teams playing. And now a stew game, and they give Stuart Scott his games and stuff. But that was, That was fun stuff. It was great, and ESPN was so cutting edge, and it was for the true sport fan, and not for the shock jock that wants to get himself noticed and get himself, you know, a million clicks. Yeah, which is what it is now. And I'm not trying to insult any of them. They do their job and they do it well, but it's not what it was. And you know, I don't know. It's sad to see it go. At the same time, growing up in the New York area, WFAN, which was the first all sports radio station, which I had the pleasure of working at really early on with it, now it's going to be, now you can watch it, listen to it on Sirius.
Yeah.
So like you can still listen to it on terrestrial radio, but you can also listen to it on Sirius. And, you know, these were things that were, you know, you tuned into Mike and the Mad Dog. You went out of your way to tune into Mike and the Mad Dog.
I listened all the time. I remember the show when they finally ended it.
Yep.
I listened to the show and I was upset.
Yeah.
We grew up, I mean, we spent so much time listening to Mike and the Dog. We knew their families. We knew everything going on between them. We knew they didn't get along. But they were must listen.
And when Chris went to Sirius and left, and I'll say, you know, working with them, Chris was always a little bit friendlier than Mike.
Yeah.
But Mike paid more attention to my Hispanic girlfriend at the time than he would pay to me throughout the day. So if she came to pick me up, he would be out there waiting, talking to her at the car. And I'm like, this guy never even talks to me, but he's talking to my girlfriend. Outstanding, you know, fantastic. It was just funny. She's like, well, who's that? And I'm like, he's the biggest star here outside of Imus. And yeah, he doesn't talk to me, but he talks to me because you're here, you know? And
Imus did talk to you.
Imus, I knocked him down, but he also wanted to kill me. But I'll never forget one thing Francesa did. It was, I remember the Knicks were playing the Warriors and, a bunch of the guy, you know, the guys, the Chicken and Mode and that whole crew. Yeah. We were all going to the game, Knicks Warriors. And they used to do the show, the play by play afterwards, but Francesa hosted the show. And I remember going up to Bob Gelb and I was like, Gelb, can you get me into the play by play? Cause I have a bunch of buddies coming. And he's like, yeah, I'll get you a table. And that was really cool. So now Francesa never spoke to me. I'm being honest when I say this, it was not an exaggeration. And all of a sudden, we're sitting at the table, and Francesa starts walking toward me. And I'm like, I don't know what he's going to say. I don't even know if he knows what I look like. I don't know who I am. So I stand up to shake his hand. He goes, I'm going, hey, it's Darren. And he goes, I know who you are, pal. Introduce me to your buddies. And he made me look like a big-time guy, which he did not have to do. So as much as Mike may have only really just wanted to hit on my girlfriend 99% of the time when I met him, he was a very – he had a moment where he could have buried me. And he didn't. So I'll always remember that. And, you know, it's just a part of our youth was the sports stuff. There was no, you know, we used to get George Michael's Sports Machine and before all this stuff. We had nothing else.
Sunday nights, 11:30, right?
We had no cable. This is what we had. The other thing we had was Warner Wolf. Let's go to the videotape. There was nothing else.
So when we got this stuff, it was a big deal.
If you had the Knicks in 38 points, you lost.
Exactly. Exactly.
And Warner Wolf really showed the feature from Aqueduct on a random Thursday.
He showed the eighth race. It was a thrill. Absolutely. It was good stuff. But I know that we're going down memory lane here a little bit, but that's what sports means to Kevin and I and Gino as well, who's not here.
Yep.
He's going to win that hula hoop, though. I'm telling you.
He will.
And, he's going to bring back the gold for us. And not next week, but the week after, because it's an extended competition. It should be a lot of fun.
Well, fun trip down memory lane.
It always is, Kev. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up?
Nope.
We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin. Gino on assignment. Talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where two idiots can talk about sports from their youth for the last 15 minutes of a show. Gino is rolling over right now. He's not dead, but he's rolling over thinking about how much we just wasted time. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. You know, listen, if you like the podcast, please share our stuff. We post a lot on social media. If you don't like it, share it anyway because we're trying to grow. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.